Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
He's known as the King of Halloween, and Larry Kirschner is truly a St. Louis original. After falsely claiming he was a haunted house advisor when he was just 19 years old, he parlayed that into becoming one of the great masters of fear on the planet, creating well-known haunted houses in St. Louis and beyond. Today on KMOX Profiles, the King of Halloween, Larry Kirschner.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Larry Kirschner is here to talk about spooky things around Halloween. And a lot of things are frightful in the world right now, but these are the things that are supposed to scare you when you go into a haunted house. Larry, how are you? Welcome back to KMOX.
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in and talking about creepy things and scary things. And I'm always amazed. You know, I live in the Fenton High Ridge area, and I used to live a little bit, I guess it would be, south of where Creepy World is, and now I live north of that. But it always amazed me, I think I might have even told you this over the years, how many cars pull into that parking lot and how many people are there on a regular basis. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, well, parking's the biggest problem with Creepy World overall, because like when you're at the darkness, you can park anywhere, you know, that you can find a spot, just like a Cardinal game, right? So we don't worry about it.
Right.
But at Creepy World, we have to worry about it. There's nowhere else to go but right there on the property. So it's actually my biggest and most stressful thing I deal with.
Yeah, the property abuts some sort of manufacturing business out there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Kohler Craft. They actually manufacture, like, plastic products. They do a lot of automotive. And they used to be a pool there. It was called Springdale Pool. And you know, it's kind of in an area that sometimes would flood and it would ruin the pool. So they
it would
just
flood
got
all
it.
The time. Yes, yeah. It would flood. Yeah. It would flood all the time. Yeah, Springdale's located a little bit further south than that, but I know the area well. How many people run through Creepy World and the darkness every year?
Well, we have three different haunted houses. The Lemprery, of course, Darkness, which is in Soulard, and Creepy World in Fenton. So it depends on how you evaluate, because we have upsale attractions too, but it would definitely be over 100,000.
So I want to go back to the beginning here a little bit. I remember interviewing you a couple of times, I think, over the past decade. And the one thing that was appealing to me of the story that you have is when I was a kid, I was putting on with my friends haunted houses as well. It was just a cool thing. We had this back room at my home before I moved here in St. Louis, and we'd put had a ping pong table. So we'd put the ping pong table up as a divider and put sheets, and there was this little bench that opened up. And I remember I had a brother who passed away about 20 years ago. He was younger than me, and we wrapped him up like a mummy, and we put some blood on the tissue paper, whatever we wrapped him in, and the kid freaked out. We couldn't use him in that particular haunted house. The difference in my haunted houses and yours is you went on to make millions of dollars and I did not. So we're going to try to dial down on what happened there, Larry, but I want you to go back to the beginning, because the point of my story is this started for you when you were young as well.
Right. Yeah, when I was a little kid, you know, I kind of just gravitated to Wolfman vs. Frankenstein, Universal Studios. So I still love all those movies, Dracula. As silly as they might seem a little bit today, because they're not very scary. They were actually very scary to people back then.
Did you grow up, let me stop you real quick. You grew up here in St. Louis?
I was born in St. Louis, and then I moved to Houston for a while, and then I came back.
So they did this thing, and this is sort of where my fascination with this world started is, and memory is weird because this was decades ago, but on WGN, or maybe it was Channel 32 in Chicago, I moved here when I was 14, they used to do this thing called Creature Feature on Friday nights. And my grandparents would be watching some stodgy old show that they would watch in the other room. I live with them and stay with them quite a bit. And I would watch the old black and white TV because it didn't really matter anyway. Creature from the Black Lagoon and Frankenstein and Wolfman and all those things. Became fascinated with it.
Yeah, back when I was a kid, like the Channel 11s of the world, you know, they didn't have like, you know, the WB or whatever. And so, you know, they had to have a somewhat original programming. So that's kind of where wrestling came from. You know, every market in the United States had those, you know, KPLR type of stations, and they would produce wrestling. They would produce horror fright shows. That's where Elvira came from. And, you know, Elvira, you know, she's pretty much, you know, the one that broke out from that. But that's what she did in the Los Angeles market. And so those kind of shows were, you know, really popular. But when I was a kid, I really gravitated to all that kind of stuff. And I, you know, found myself like watching Ultraman. I don't know if anybody remembers Johnny Sacco.
I remember Johnny Sacco.
Yeah, I love Johnny Sacco with his watch, which think about like today with Apple, right? You know, you can make your watch do things. But Johnny Sacco could control a robot with his watch. I used to watch like Battlestar Galactica, Godzilla, all horror movies. I mean, that's just what I loved. And, you know, I built my first haunted house in St. Louis in the basement. And we used blankets for walls.
Right.
And in a duplex. And then we would hang them from the ceiling and then make a maze out of it. And then I think we charged people like 25 cents. And, you know, and it's like, you know, it kind of stuck with me. And then when I moved to Houston, I remember as a kid seeing a flyer for something that said Haunted Hotel or something. And I was like really fascinated with that. And I wanted to go, and I never did. And I didn't go to a haunted house until I came back to St. Louis. And I was going to Fox High School, and I actually never went through a haunted house until I was a senior in high school, and I was working at the TV station. Fox actually has their own TV station, and I was actually producing the country's first ever video yearbook.
Really?
And yeah, and I even tried to get on Johnny Carson. I sent him a letter.
That's interesting.
He sent me a letter back saying, hey, thanks, you know, for, you know, like promoting video, you know, to try to like change like yearbooks to video.
But they said no.
They said no. And so anyway, but my friend came to me and he says, hey, we're going to go to this haunted house called Thayer Ashen's Mansion, if you remember that one. And that was where they bust you over and everything. And he said, we're going to go there. And I said, no, don't. Like, let's go there and like, let's tell him we'll make a video, you know, for his haunted house, and we'll get in for free, you know? And so that...
So what era is this?
That would have been 1988.
Okay.
And so then I met this guy named Pat Rayburn, and he had Thayer Ashen's Mansion. There was another haunt he owned, too, called Connie Morgue. And then he ended up doing a Christmas show at this place called the Stockdrum Castle, which is in Kimswick. And so I actually... That's where I started. I started helping him, like, do his scenery. I did all of his video work. I mean, this is back when you had 3/4 inch and you had to like, you know, edit manually.
Oh, yeah. I did that back in the day.
And so that's kind of where I started. And this is a funny story because I did all this work for this guy on his Christmas thing and his haunted house. And he had a big Halloween party. I filmed it David Letterman style and I was interviewing people. And then the next year he calls me and asks me if I would come help him set Thayer Ashen's Mansion back up. And I was actually in his basement. The basement of the mansion, and I was like working on a scene by myself, and I just dropped the spray cans. I was like, you know, this guy didn't pay me last year. You know, he's like, why am I here? And I was like 19, and I left, and I went to this gas station right up the street from Thayer Ashen's Mansion, and I was getting a drink, and I saw this flyer on the counter, and it said the haunted church, and it had like Casper. A clip art piece of Casper flying out of the window. I was like,
pretty scary.
Yeah, no, I was like, no, it's not really scary. And I was thinking to myself, man, I bet you this guy could use some help. And it was right around the corner. So I went over there, and I'll never forget it. And I walked into the place, and it was wide open, and they had a Raggedy Ann and Andy scene. It was the stupidest thing. They had a cage that was made with, you know, like garden hoses so a gorilla could get out. And you could see everything. And I just walked up to him and I said, hey, I think you need my help, you know, because he was trying to compete with Thayer Ashen. He was right around the corner.
You were 19 at the time.
And I said, hey, I'm a haunted house consultant, you know, a haunted house designer, which is not true. I think I might have been
the original incarnation of fake news.
Yeah,
there, Larry,
fake
right?
news. That was probably the first person to ever say the words haunted house designer. And I said, hey, I'd love to, you know, work on your haunted house. And so I actually recruited two of my cousins to help me. And over 3 days, we rebuilt it. And then I managed it, acted in it, and I actually remember going to like Apple Butter Festival and handing out flyers. And this is a funny story that you probably would like. I had a cousin who died a few years later, unfortunately, and he really was into his character of Jason, and he smelled really, really bad. This is a funny story. And he had a zombie mask on, then he had the Jason mask over it, so he would lift up, you know, and he had a real machete. Back then we had real stuff. Okay. I remember actually having a real Bowie knife, and a guy had a real drill that he drilled holes in the wall.
That's funny in and of itself.
And anyway, everybody that was working there was like, dude, you got to talk to your cousin because he just smells so bad. It's like he hasn't taken a shower or like in a million years. So I walked up to him. I said, Danny, I got to talk to you, okay? Once you walk in, you're seeing the customers are, you know, grossed out, everybody. And he goes, Larry, I'm Jason. I have to smell bad. You know, it's like that's how far we got into it back then, okay? And I remember a scene when at the end of House on Haunted Hill, that's where I started, and I would cover myself in hay for every group, and I had a weed eater under there. And then they would come out, I'd jump out with the weed eater, and then they would scream. Then my cousin would come around the other corner with a chainsaw, and it was just a great time. And I used to do all that, you know, back when I was 18, 19 years old. And ultimately what happened was I built House on Haunted Hill up into a haunted house that actually put Therashen Mansion, the kingpin, out of business. And then that guy, and this is just the thing in the haunted house business back then, that guy didn't pay me. Okay, I had gotten his haunted house up to like where we did almost 40,000 people, and he didn't pay me. And he says, hey, we're not going to use you anymore because we're going to handle it from here on out. And I'm like, okay. And I was just strolling around downtown, and I saw that Welch baby carriage factory with all the windows boarded up. And it said for sale, and I just walked in. And then that's how the darkness got started. And I'll tell you a funny story because this is true. And it's still there today because, you know, the Welch Baby Carriage Factory is now it's an apartment complex. So I ended up buying the building next door. But if you look at my building where the new darkness is, and I look and you they're sharing alley, a parking lot alley type thing. And you look up on the wall, it says Sunlight Factory.
Right.
And that's where the darkness name came from, because he had over 400, 500 windows. It probably has more windows than any building in St. Louis, and they were all boarded up because it's a turn-of-the-century factory, so they had to have light, okay? And they were all deteriorated and rotted. And you would walk in there, it was totally dangerous because the guy wouldn't put no light bulbs in. And I was like, Sunlight Factory, you know? And that's where I came up with the name The Darkness, because I was like, it's completely dark in here, you know? And that's where we got our start, and I never thought that it would get as big as it did.
St. Louis's traffic station, KMOX. Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Talking about scary stuff here with Larry Kirshner, the King of Halloween. People call you the King of Halloween, don't they?
You know, I've been called that, yeah, because of a lot of the things that we've done in the haunted house industry. Believe it or not, the biggest trade show now that St. Louis City has, okay, because that robot show left, is the Halloween haunted house escape room show that I brought here. It generates something like $8 million for the city. And it's the whole entire haunted house. Okay, people don't understand is that Halloween is not popular around the world, okay?
Yeah, I think people forget that, right? That's a U.S. thing.
But theme parks around the world have gravitated to this idea of having a Halloween event. So trick-or-treating is, there's no such thing. So for, like, if you go to China, okay, haunted houses are super popular inside of amusement parks. And they do hundreds of thousands of people, okay?
They also kill people. They really kill people,
yeah,
right?
Probably,
it's kind of like,
yeah,
having the machete back in the day.
If you don't like the government, they probably say,
yes,
oh, this
exactly.
is... Okay. But the thing of it is that haunted houses are popular worldwide, okay? I mean, they're popular everywhere. You go to England, you go to London Dungeon, they have a haunted house. I mean, haunted houses are everywhere. And so Halloween has been exported across the world, but only as an amusement event, not as a trick-or-treat event.
Right, right.
And so haunted houses are kind of worldwide now, and it's a really an American export. And the worldwide trade show is right here in St. Louis. And we open up our haunted house for those people. And I meet people from Spain. I mean, it's really interesting talking to the guy from Spain. And he was talking about the, like, you know, when Trump talks about taxes and fair or import. And he was telling me that, you know, if when he imports products from the United States, the haunted house products, he has to pay 40% tariff. Okay. And really? Otherwise, he would have ordered more. But and so then it made me realize, yeah, European Union is unfair to the United States for exports. But yeah, it's like 40%. And so but I mean, there's people from every country almost in the world comes to St. Louis for that show.
Do they know you?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you're on the map, right? You're the guy.
Yeah, I mean, let me tell you something. One of the reasons why the darkness has been kind of hailed as the best haunted house in the world. Okay. You know, we had a great haunted house, but then I worked really hard to get this trade show to come to St. Louis. And then when it came, we decided we would open for this trade show. But that put a lot of pressure on us. Now, what people don't understand is we build attractions all over the world, not necessarily haunted houses. We build dark rides, mini golfs. I worked for everybody from Universal Studios to you name it. And so what that does is, like, I started feeling pressure, like, oh, the whole haunted house industry is coming. Okay, so we got to go a little nuts. And we actually built the building that we had bigger in the back, and that's where TerraVision is, our monster museum. So this show's been coming to St. Louis for 12 years. I think next year will be the 13th. And so every year we spend probably every penny we make renovating it so that when the haunt industry comes, that they see something they've never seen before. And the darkness has transformed almost like a caterpillar into a butterfly over 13 years. It's become something that, like, I don't even know is realistic. I mean, I don't even know how it's possible. And one time I was at the exit and I was talking to a haunt owner from another state or something. He came out and he didn't actually know me. And he said, "Who owns this place? This guy must be crazy." Okay. And I go, "Crazy? Why?" "Because how could he make money? He spent there's no question that he spent millions of dollars here on this haunted house. This haunted house has almost been like, to me, it's almost been like a passion. And I've gotten so wrapped up in it that every year before we even open the doors, I already know what I want to do next year."
Really? That soon?
Yes.
So it's not like, because a lot of places, you know, you wrap it up the day, I don't even, you guys close how long after Halloween? It's not the day after.
Well, this year we close on November 2nd, then we open for Christmas.
Yeah, you do
and
some
Valentine's.
Christmas stuff. But I mean, I hear that from a lot of people with planning, you know, the day after the season's over or whatever the case may be, but you're already thinking about it before it opens for this season,
yeah,
whatever
so we,
season.
Like, for example, we're adding, for our escape rooms, we're adding a fifth escape, which is actually at the darkness, and I really struggled with it for months, was trying to pick between Dracula, because I love Dracula. I always played Dracula. I won a costume contest as a kid as Dracula and or Wizard of Oz. And I ultimately chose Wizard of Oz. So we're building Wizard of Oz. But in order to get it done for the Transworld show, I had to start, you know, a month ago. Because a lot of escape rooms are just like one rooms with like junk in, with locks. Mine are high tech. I'm shooting video effects for it. I am having custom animations made for it. I mean, I want you when you go in there to feel like I'm at the Wizard of Oz, okay? That takes time. It could take 5 to 6 months. So we've already started it. As far as the darkness is concerned, I was just on the phone yesterday with a vendor who works for me, and I just placed an order for new stuff for the darkness already, okay? I'm actually thinking, hey, maybe we can get some of it done before Christmas, you know? And then we'll pick up again between Christmas and Valentine's, and then we'll finish it after Valentine's. But last year for the Transworld show, we didn't ever even get finished. We were working on it in October, and it took us all the way to March the 20th or whatever when the trade show was, and we still didn't have it done. So then when the trade show was over, we still worked on it for another few weeks to get the darkness done. And then when the darkness is done, we went over to Creepy World, okay?
Yeah.
And we spent all spring, all summer on Creepy World.
You're like, here's what I'm thinking, hearing that description, because I'm a big Bruce Springsteen guy. You're like the Springsteen of the haunt world. You're just working, working, and working because you have such passion for it.
Yeah. And so, like, between working on the haunted houses, you know, and then building attractions for other people, you know, we produce a magazine and a website that helps people find haunted houses called hauntworld.com. And so we've been doing that for years. We're the only people that produce a magazine for the haunted house industry. It loses money. And my wife's like, you've got to stop doing this magazine. Okay. And I'm like, I know, you're right. But if we do, then the haunted house industry won't have a printed magazine. So it's a little bit of responsibility, I feel. And, you know, and we want to provide information and help people. You know, I'll tell you the biggest thing that I find with haunted houses is safety. Okay. Because a lot of the people doing it, they might have a passion for doing it, but they don't understand how to make them safe. Okay. I've been through many, many haunted houses that are so unsafe. Okay.
And then from what perspective? Not that a blade is
flammable materials.
Face.
Flammable
okay.
materials.
Well, that's scary.
Tripping hazards.
Yeah.
Things that could cut people, you know, things of that nature. You know, I can have the city come inspect my haunted house. I mean, like, trust me, okay, I do this for a living. I'm more concerned about somebody getting injured in my haunted house than the city is. You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so, and I help other people. Every year, I pour about 100 gallons of flame retardant on my haunted house. Over the last 13 years, it probably has, you know, thousands of gallons, okay? We have a sophisticated fire system. We check, triple check for trip hazards, anything. Like, so somebody could fix something in a haunted house, and this is a common problem. Somebody could fix something, and they put a screw through, and they don't realize a screw poked through the other side.
Yeah.
And then that could tear somebody's eye out, okay? So there's so many things that could go wrong. See, in an amusement park, like, let's say if you get in a roller coaster, you're secured in. You're supposed to be, and it's sometimes some people have flown out, right? But you're supposed to be secure. If you go on a dark ride, you're in a controlled environment. In a haunted house, the difference is you let people make their own decisions walking through. And so they could touch anything, hit anything, you know, and they could run, they could mm-hmm. walk. There's a lot of variables there, and you have to be really on top of it to make these things safe.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, he's known as the King of Halloween. Larry Kirshner is here talking about Fear Fest and Creepy World and the darkness and all things spooky. Before the break, you were talking about safety and making sure that everything's safe in your haunted houses. You had to have had, I want to talk about how people are scared and what happens when they're scared. Has anyone ever had like a health incident, heart attack or anything like that?
Not in our haunted house, but a few years ago, somebody did die of a heart attack at a haunted house. And I thought it was kind of some of the news people, you know, like made fun of it and said, wow, this place must be really be scary. I mean, I didn't find it funny. And that guy actually called me and said, you know, asked for my advice, like how to deal with the publicity side of it. And but no, we haven't had a heart attack in the haunted house, but we have had panic attacks.
Yeah.
And some of those can get scary. Because you don't know what that person's health conditions are. I'm actually the first haunted house ever, and I actually promoted this within the haunted house industry, and we started providing for free warning signs to haunted houses. I actually had an attorney help me draft it up, and then, of course, with my knowledge, I started bullet pointing. I even came up with the most clever thing ever. There's actually a curtain you have to walk through, and it's perfectly shredded, you know, cut.
Sure.
So when it's not moving, you can actually read it. You have to walk through it, okay? And I
installed. Oh, so it has like printed words on it.
Yes,
I see what you
yes.
mean.
Yes. Right. And when it's still, you can read it, but then you have to pass through it. So I print warning signs on the back of the tickets. I have them on my website, and that may cost us some customers, but I don't want people coming through with conditions that would not be, like epilepsy, for example. Not good to go through a haunted house
with strobe lights and things like
no,
that, right?
Absolutely yeah. not. And we get these questions, you know, and I answer them honestly and tell people. And then you have, you know, people with that have not physically fit. Like when you talk about Creepy World, it takes over an hour to complete it. I mean, that's no joke. It's probably mm-hmm. the longest haunted house in the United States. It takes over an hour to walk through it easily. So if you're, you know, have weak legs or whatever, it's probably not the haunt for you, you know? And then, you know, darkness has stairs and things of this nature. So making sure your customers know exactly what they're in for is important.
What is truly scary? And I want you to address the issue of technology, which doesn't make things necessarily more scary, but certainly has helped you in some of the things you're trying to achieve. As a film guy, there aren't a lot of things in movies that scare me anymore. Usually it's more psychological. I always point toward a great Audrey Hepburn movie, Wait Until Dark, from 1963, as a really scary movie set in an apartment. I don't know if you've ever seen that. She plays a blind lady, Efren Zemblis Jr. and Alan Arkin. But for the most part, you probably see movies. They're not scary movies. How do you truly make these things scary?
Well, you know, I love movies, and I've probably seen thousands of them. And I actually wanted to be a movie director. That's what I really wanted to do. I still do, actually.
Me too. We have that in common.
And if you go to our Scarefest page, you'll see that we've made a lot of cool videos. I'm really into making the videos. And, you know, The Exorcist really scared me as a kid because I believed that it was real. Okay. And so I think that anytime you make people believe something is real or could really happen, that's scary. So like walking in a dark alley and then somebody walks out from behind a trash can, that's scary. You're like, ooh, wait a minute. I'm scared. Okay. It's easy to scare people. And I tell people this all the time. And I know that everybody's done it. Like your sister, brother, niece, whatever, your wife is in the house doing something, maybe doing laundry, and they don't know you're there. And you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait. And you think you could do it anytime. And you make that person's guard be so low. And then when you jump out, like, you know, it's the funniest thing ever. You wish you had every one of those instances on camera. And so in a haunted house, I mean, that's really the key. You know, the difference between a movie and a haunted house is that in a haunted house, it's on the ultimate side of interactive. Okay. So you can make a movie 3D and that can only go so far, but you still know you're in a seat, in a comfortable seat, watching a screen. In a haunted house, you don't know what's next. You don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what is going to happen. And so in the darkness, for example, floors fall underneath you, okay? Floors shake underneath you, walls fall on you, things fall on you from overhead, actors fly over your head, they jump out, and, you know, I mean, it's like, so you really just don't know. And, you know, of course, you get, a lot of people get really scared, okay? And, you know, that's the name of the game. You have to scare the people, and that's the hardest thing to do. You know, especially if you get big crowds.
Have we had bodily fluids lost from being scared?
I remember one time, like, when this girl jumped out of her shoes, and she ran into something and, like, was curled up in a ball, and my actor walked over there, and she totally freaked out. All he was trying to do was give her shoes back, you know? It's like, but, yes, people literally, you know, get scared, and yes, people have, you know, peed themselves. And some haunted houses have these things called a pee board, and they mark it down, like, every time.
Oh, they really do?
Yeah, but I don't do it because I think it's kind of gross. But I do have That's something funny. In the darkness. It's really funny where I make fun of that. Okay. And it's a CGI effect, and you go look and it looks like it's a chalkboard, and you see how many people. And then when you get real close to it, it changes to a monster and scares you. And it's kind of funny. It's kind of a scare going out the door.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Larry Kirshner here talking about spooky stuff on KMOX. And I mentioned technology before the break. Maybe speak to the issue of how you've been in this business for a long time. How have haunted houses changed even in the last decade or so?
Well, you know, going back to what I was telling you, the first haunted house I actually operated myself, I mean, we used real weapons. We didn't think about safety back then. So, I mean, haunted houses have drastically changed, and a lot of them, if we go back to, like, any city, actually, from the early 90s, late 80s, whatever, most haunted houses just would open. They wouldn't get inspected. They didn't have sprinklers. So they didn't have any of that stuff. So a lot of those haunted houses got, you know, eliminated, because of safety, okay? And so, obviously, it's changed from that standpoint that they're a whole heck of a lot safer. But the amount of detail that goes into them and the amount of technology. And I'll give you an example. When I had House in Haunted Hill, I remember sitting in my house recording scary music over and over and over and over again on, you know, I would try to buy the cassette tape that was the longest. And so you would record on one side, then you'd have to record it again on the second side. So then we'd run downstairs and flip because, hey, the audio went off. And you'd have to run downstairs and flip it and start it over again.
Ah, so the cassette era, yeah. Yes.
And then we had endless loops, but now we can actually scare people like with, audio controllers, like where it's like when you walk in front of a sensor, boom, the sound goes off.
Right.
And so everything's digital now. Everything's cheaper to have high-tech technology. We're using CGI effects. But I'll tell you one of the most interesting things, too, is like when you come to the darkness, back in 1994, we would have like 30, 35 actors, our creepy world, whatever. And now we have like 100, 90. I mean, it's become a whole different animal. And when you exit the darkness, we have this beautiful party room, you know, with I have 10 restored horror pinball games. I have a 3-minute escape room. I have an electric chair you can ride. At Creepy World, we have zombie axe throwing, zombie paintball, you know, and we have a pumpkin display with famous faces carved in pumpkins. And so one of the biggest ways that has changed is it's not so much anymore about scaring people. It's about entertaining people. And so we have line actors, which we never had, you know, over 10 years ago. So we have people entertaining people outside. Another thing is we never did photo ops. We didn't even allow people to bring a camera in. And so now every single person, before they go in, we take their picture. We upload it to Facebook. It's more today about entertaining people than it is about blood and guts and scaring people.
Yeah, I think I read an interview with you. There are some groups out there that are going to more extreme, I don't know what you refer to them as, but you think some of the stuff out there is gimmicky too, right?
Yeah, you know, like one of the guys who calls himself a haunted house is this thing called McKinney Manor or whatever. And if you look on YouTube, he's got, you know, millions of views on his videos. He calls himself a haunted house, and websites have actually ranked his haunted house as one of the scariest in the world. It's not a haunted house. It's a torture chamber. Okay, there's a difference. And you can't relate that to a haunted house. And they got this thing in New York called Blackout or something where they put you in there and they do, extreme sexual things, and they make you eat things. And that's not a haunted house. Okay, that's like a torture room. And so, like, what those people do where they shove stuff in your mouth or pour snakes on you or tie you up and waterboard you, they actually waterboard you, okay? How is that a haunted house? That's not a haunted house. And I told this guy, Russ McKinney, okay, you're going to kill somebody, okay? And then you're going to, like, and then people are going to say that was a haunted house. You're not a haunted house.
So you told him that.
Yeah, I think what I really think is he's a weirdo, okay? What person wants to waterboard another person or pour things in their mouth or dump venomous spiders on them or slap them and hit them? And what I mean, this is like, it's
yeah,
weird.
That's bizarre. I guess I would question, I'd flip it around and say, what person wants to have that happen?
No, I mean, you have to be crazy, okay, to want to do that. But you know, I'll give you an example. I have a friend or a friend, and he's in Indiana. And he has a haunted house called Fear Fair. And he did a haunt tour for the show that was up in that area. And everybody, all the haunt owners complained, okay, because he allows touching in his haunted house.
Do you guys allow touching?
No.
Okay, you don't.
Of course not.
All right.
And that's like one of the number one questions. Can they touch you? Okay.
So none of the actors can touch anyone
and
vice versa?
No, you're not allowed to touch anyone. So anyway, this guy Fear Fair, he tells me, I call him and I said, well, man, you're getting beat over the head, you know, because haunted house owners typically don't allow people to touch, so they're not expecting to get touched. He says, well, I thought they knew that and I should have told them that. And he says, well, our customers love it. And I said, well, how many customers do you get? And he said, oh, we do, you know, about 10,000. I said, 10,000. I said, you know, like, not, there's a haunted house not far from you that's doing 40,000, okay? I said, maybe the 10,000 that do come would like it even if you didn't touch, and then there might be 10,000, 20,000 more
right.
that would come if you didn't touch them. I said, no one wants to be touched, okay? And I can guarantee you for Russ McKinney, his little thing, yes, there are some weird people that want to be waterboarded, okay? But the mass majority, and when I say mass majority, we're talking 99%, do not want to be touched, okay? And, you know, and it's creepy. And then you have this weirdo up in Pennsylvania, and he tried to do the Naked and Afraid haunted house. You know,
no, I haven't heard about that one.
Oh yeah, that was national news. That was on Good Morning America.
What was he doing?
He wanted people to go through his haunted house naked. Now,
I see, and
you know what? I predicted what would happen is his own community would turn on him. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. So he had to cancel it. And if you look at his Facebook page at the time, people were like, "This dude is an old dude, a pedophile, and he has to be." You know, it's like he wants to look at. You know, I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, that's more than.
And you know what? Those are signs of they're gimmicks. And whenever you see a haunted house try a gimmick, like say for example, you know, get your money back, haunted house. That's a gimmick. That means my haunted house isn't very good, and I'm trying to trick you into coming.
What does Larry Kirshner's home look like? Do you have a bunch of scary stuff there, or do you relegate it to the darkness?
You know, it's really funny. If you come through the darkness, okay, you know, we've talked a lot about the darkness, but we also, like I said, we have Creepy World, we have the escape rooms and the lamp. But I collected a lot. I used to go to a lot of horror conventions, and I'd buy a lot of horror toys and stuff. And so I didn't know where to put them all. So when you go through the X of the darkness, they're all on display there. Okay, so they're out of my house.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier, but so the house is sort of separate from that world.
Although I have a bathroom downstairs that's all themed like Halloween. But, you know, I still have like collect Mago toys and you know, just stuff that, you know, reminded me of being a kid. But and I have a lot of pinball games, but I, in the haunted house, all of my prized horror pinball games are on display for people to play.
Larry Kirshner, you're a strange dude, but I love it. Great storytelling. Congratulations on all the success. I think it's funny that you faked yourself off as being a consultant when you were a kid, 19 years old, and you're that now, basically, right?
Yeah, you know, not that I don't know how if you have time for it, but you know, we started building attractions for people, and at first it was mainly haunted houses from people visiting the darkness and wanting us to build them for them. And then next thing you know, we were building them for like Six Flags, Kennywood, Universal, Busch Gardens, I mean, you name it, Cedar Point, which I know a lot of people know them, all over the world. And we transitioned into doing other things like dark rides. And this guy calls me one day and he wants me to do an Incredible Hulk haunted house, and I said Incredible Hulk haunted house, you know, I ended up talking him into doing a blacklight mini golf, and then that started the whole wave of blacklight mini golf was when we built the Hulk. But anyway, he said, "We have a Spider-Man, but I have to find a vendor for that, but you couldn't do that." And I'm like, "What do you mean we can't do that?" He goes, "Well, I want it to be like Universal Studios. I want to see Spider-Man fight the villains." And he says, "Can you do that?" And I actually, for 30 seconds, go, "No, I can't do that," in my brain. I was like, "Absolutely, I can do that. Okay, absolutely." And then he says, "You can?" And I said, "Yes, I can." Well, I had never done CGI effects ever. And so then that began, and that's what excites me, is to do something that I've never done before. And so when somebody tells you can't do it, it's great to say, "Yes, I can, and I'll show you." And there was only two Spider-Man dark rides ever built, and I built one, and it opened 30 seconds before it was supposed to officially open. That's how hard it was to do. But it was a very rewarding thing.
Larry Kirshner, awesome to see you again. Thanks for the great conversation.
Hey, no problem.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.